Morning. I'm going to talk about three different models of residential recovery, houses for addiction outcome, and what the outcomes look like at 1 year. No financial relationships to disclose. I want to acknowledge the members of the research team and the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism for funding the study. And these are the three different models that we're going to look at that are represented by three different programs where we collected data. Two of the programs were sober living housing programs. I'm going to define what that is for those of you who don't know in just a minute. And the other was a residential social model treatment program. The first program, Clean and Sober Transitional Living, is a sober living program located in Fair Oaks, California, which is near Sacramento in the Central Valley part of California. Options Recovery Services is a program located in Berkeley, California, and the social model residential treatment was also located near Sacramento. The purpose here and my goal for today is simply to very briefly describe the characteristics of each of these models, describe the characteristics of the individuals who made use of these services, and then look at outcomes at six months and 1 year. Okay, what are sober living houses? First of all, they're alcohol and drug-free living environments for individuals who are wanting to abstain from drugs and alcohol. A major strength of sober living houses is that they're primarily self-supported. In other words, they're financially supported by resident fees. So there's no government, there's no local or state or federal government funds that are necessary to support the operations of the programs. Because they don't offer formal treatment services at the facility, they're not licensed by the state. Which can be a strength and a weakness. I mean, one of the concerns is there's no oversight. However, there are sober living house organizations that houses can belong to, and they're kind of associations, affiliations, and they do things like monitor health and safety. They monitor the quality of services of the various houses. The overall philosophy of sober living houses is very 12-step oriented. The programs that we looked at required that people be actively involved in 12-step groups and be working a recovery program. The residents also had to follow basic rules. They're abstinence-oriented houses. People could not use drugs or alcohol. If they did, it was grounds for discharge. There were other things, like they needed to attend weekly house meetings, be involved in house maintenance, show support of peers. Peer support was a big value in these houses. They can be used in conjunction with formal treatment or as an alternative to formal treatment. Clean and Sober Transitional Living in the Central Valley was a freestanding sober living house organization that had no affiliation with any type of treatment program. In contrast, the Options Recovery Program was associated with a structured outpatient treatment program, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about both of those in a minute. And another strength of the sober living house environment is that the lengths of stay are open-ended. In other words, residents can stay as long as they want, as long as they're in compliance with the basic expectations of the house and they're compliant with the rules. So the resident decides when they're ready to move on, rather than responding to a preordained length of stay. The procedures for our study, first of all, our study was 5 years. We conducted interviews at baseline, 6, and 12-month follow-up. We also have an 18-month follow-up, but we're just now starting to look at those data. We targeted 300 residents, sober living residents, in two agencies, including 20 different sober living houses. The treatment program data collection was problematic in that we had targeted 60. The program closed after we had started collecting data, so we ended up with a very small N for the treatment program of 23. The primary outcomes that we looked at, and we administered these at baseline, 6 months and 12 months. Baseline was within the first week of entering the house, were the addiction severity index, The brief symptom inventory, which you don't see there, but which is a measure of psychiatric severity symptoms, and peak density, which is a six-month measure of drug and alcohol use, where the client, the individual is asked to think about the last 6 months and think about, in particular, the month that they used the most, and then they're asked how many days during that month they used. So it's a maximum number of days measure. Okay, these are some of the characteristics of clean and sober transitional living. These are the houses that are freestanding, that are not associated with any kind of treatment program. And basically, they're places for people to live where there's no drugs, there's no alcohol, and they're not required to be involved in any other services, although they certainly can be if they want to. They have 16 houses, 136 beds. The program is structured into two phases. In the first phase, which is 30 to 90 days, there are more restrictions. There are things like curfews that they have to respond to and be in compliance with. They have to attend mandatory 12-step meetings at least 5 days a week. Once they transition into phase two, there are fewer requirements. They need to continue to abide by basic house rules, but there's no curfew, and the requirements for 12-step attendance are decreased at that point. The program has a residence council, and the best way to describe a residence council is a type of resident government. So the people who live there, the residents, meet once a week, and they all have certain positions, and they have input into the operations of the houses. The program is owned by one individual. But the philosophy of recovery is very much peer involvement and peer empowerment philosophy, where they have input into the operations, the management, money decisions, types of things that are purchased or not. And this is a big part of the philosophy. The costs at Clean and Sober Transitional Living are $695 a month. Most of the residents meet their costs through employment, the majority. And most of them have some type of work history. I would characterize clean and sober transitional living overall as, on average, a middle class type of population. Very different at options for recovery. These houses differed in a number of ways. First of all, much smaller, four houses, 58 beds, to be living at the sober living houses at Options, you had to be involved in their outpatient treatment program. That was a requirement. And the treatment program was quite intensive. Started out at 5 days a week, and it decreased over time. Almost all of the individuals who live at the sober living houses at Options are on general assistance or a social security income as a result of a psychiatric disability. So they're all very low income. There's a requirement of 30 days of abstinence before entering the house. And the way that would usually work is a person would enroll in the treatment program, and if they didn't have a positive environment to live, they would stay at a nearby shelter. There was a shelter right down the street that was a dry shelter. And if they did well, complying with the rules at the shelter, they maintained their sobriety, they were involved in treatment, they could then apply to get into the sober living houses. One of the things to know about this program, the treatment program was about 9 months, but people could continue to live in the sober living houses as long as they wanted. Characteristics of the social model treatment program, again, small n, 23. They had 16 beds. They were 8 weeks long. However, for individuals who completed the residential treatment portion of the program, they did have a limited number of sober living houses that people could transition into after completing treatment. We thought that this number would be relatively small, but it actually turned out to be about half the population. So this program is really kind of a combination of individuals who went through four weeks of treatment and individuals who went through treatment and then also transitioned into sober living houses. They offer a variety of individual and individual counseling, group counseling, variety of professional services and 12-step groups. The costs are expensive, $3,000 a month. So you either needed to have good insurance or you had to have access to substantial resources. And these are the demographics. You can see mostly men. The options program had a women's program that closed shortly after we began collecting the data. That's why we have like two or three. Large non-white population at the options program, 70%. Mostly that was African American. Slightly older mean age at the options program relative to the other two. You can see the income level is substantially lower, about half that of CSLT and about a fifth that of the treatment program. These are the referral sources, and you can see that most of the referrals came from friend, family, or self, especially for the treatment program, followed by criminal justice system, and less so inpatient. At baseline, we asked people to indicate their usual housing during the past 6 months. And what you see here are the percentages that indicated being homeless or in a shelter was their usual housing, the percentage that indicated that jail or prison was their usual housing. You can see at options, about 35% indicated that being homeless or in a shelter was their typical housing situation the last 6 months. And at CSLT, it was the opposite, where about almost 35%, I guess 34%, indicated that being incarcerated was their usual housing situation. We also saw differences by type of substances abused, high rates of cocaine dependence at options, largely an urban African-American population, not surprising. The other two programs are located in the Central Valley part of California, where there's a lot of methamphetamine dependence. Largely white population, which is also associated with methamphetamine dependence, not surprising. We used mixed model regressions to look at outcome variables over time. And here you see the results of the addiction severity index. And this was a common finding for several of our variables, where the people entering the treatment program entered with higher severity that improved at 6 months, and then was maintained at 12 months. The other two, the sober living house programs, entered with lower severity that either improved slightly at 6 months and then was maintained at 12 months, or it was low at baseline and remained low at subsequent time points. Not surprising that the sober living houses entered with lower severity. At the options program, they required typically 30 days of abstinence. So obviously, if you're looking at ASI measures 30 days, they're going to enter with low severity. Clean and sober transitional living. Also, they didn't have a mandatory minimum amount of time that they needed to be abstinent, but they didn't admit people who were actively using, people right off the street, people who were in withdrawal, whereas the treatment program did. Clean and sober transitional living also admitted more people who were from controlled environments, people from residential treatment, people from jail or prison. You can see the exact same pattern for the ASI drug. Higher severity of treatment at baseline, lower severity for the sober living housing programs. But at 6 and 12 months, we ran analyses to see if there were any differences between the programs, and there weren't, for either drug severity or alcohol severity. A bit of a different finding here. All three programs showed some improvement on employment severity between baseline and 6 months, and that was pretty much maintained at 12 months. Family severity, we did not find any significant improvement. People entered the programs with moderately high severity, and that didn't seem to get any better over time. So that, I would consider that a relative weakness. The ASI legal severity, similar to drug and alcohol, where individuals in treatment entered with high severity that improved at 6 months, was maintained at 12 months. The other two programs entered with relatively lower severity that either decreased some or was maintained at a relatively low level of severity. ASI Medical didn't improve either. And looking at that first line, the treatment line, it looks like it would be a significant improvement, but it's actually not. When it increased at 12 months, it moved out of the significance area. On psychiatric symptoms, we saw improvement in the treatment program. The same pattern, where they enter treatment with higher severity and then they improve and it's maintained at 12 months. The other two programs decreased somewhat, but nothing, not significantly. And these are fairly high. The concern here is that these are fairly high levels at 6 and 12 months. These levels are consistent with people who are attending outpatient psychiatric treatment programs. Peak density, this is the six-month measure of drug and alcohol use. We saw very large declines in all three programs, slightly less in clean and sober transitional living, but very significant nonetheless. In conclusions, first, the three types of recovery houses had structural differences. They were organized differently, and they served different populations, particularly in terms of economic status. Most of the outcome measures that we looked at showed either improvement on outcome variables or continuation of low problem severity. Family and medical severity were moderately high at baseline, did not improve. At 6 and 12-month follow-ups across the different programs, the findings were similar. Peak density was slightly better at the Options Recovery Services program relative to Clean and Sober Transitional Living. And I think the take-home message is that communities should consider different models of recovery housing that are available and how they fit with the needs of their community. And these are some sober living house associations that are available to consult with folks who are interested in developing sober living houses in their community, and they're available for ongoing consultation and helping houses monitor things like health, safety, quality standards, and that sort of thing. That's it. Thank you very much.